Today is the feast of Saint Isidore the Farmer. In Spanish, San Isidro Labrador. In Tagalog, San Isidro Magsasaka. Tama ba? Magsasaka. I've never heard him ever called that. I've never heard that used anywhere. It's always San Isidro Labrador. San Isidro was a farmer, peasant, worker, laborer, back in the 12th century. I hope you don't mind if I share a little bit about San Isidro, because I was just in Madrid 6 months ago, so I was able to pray at the tomb of San Isidro, at the shrine of San Isidro in Madrid. Someone complained, well not complained, but noted that on the feast of Our Lady of Fatima, I gave a very long homily. And on the feast of Saint Matthias, I gave a very short homily. So that's because I met Our Lady of Fatima, I met Jacinta, I met Francisco when I was in Fatima last November. I've never met Matthias, I don't know anything about him. So he's not nearly as popular, even though his feast day yesterday was a higher ranking feast as an apostle. I have more personal connection to Our Lady of Fatima and now to San Isidro. Well, let me go back to 26 years ago when I was a deacon, the year 2000. I was assigned to the parish of San Isidro in Labrador, Pangasinan. We just passed through Labrador, those who were on our trip 2 weeks ago. Labrador is on the way to Alaminos. You go from Bugoyon, then go westward, pass through Labrador, then Suab, that area. So I was there during the summer of the year 2000. In fact, this time of year, exactly 26 years ago, I was there for the fiesta. And the weeks before the fiesta, all the neighboring barangays and their own chapels had their own fiestas. All the fiestas were in the first part of May, late April or early May, to build up to the town fiesta in Labrador. So that's it, San Isidro, Labrador, Pangasinan. So last November, I was on the clergy pilgrimage. We went to Madrid, we went to the beautiful Spanish church of San Isidro. And his body is in a casket way up high in the altar behind glass. They say that he's incorrupt, although we can't see him, but they say the body's incorrupt. Big glass shrine there on the main altar. And below him is the burial place of his wife, Maria, what's her name? Toribia. But she's also known as Maria de la Cabeza. And I learned that the reason why is because her whole body is not there. It's just her head. Her head and her foot or some part of her leg or something like that. The guide that we had was not too impressed with Maria de la Cabeza. She wasn't even sure if she was there. But the star of that shrine is San Isidro. So we learned about San Isidro and the great devotion there. This is right in the heart of Madrid. Madrid is a big city, and it's been a big city for centuries. So I was starting to wonder, well, where is the farmer? Where was he a farmer? We don't have a farmer in Madrid. There's no farms here. So I asked the woman, well, where's Labrador? I said, where's Labrador? She said, Labrador's not a place. It means farmer. Labrador means farmer. So San Isidro Labrador is Saint Isidore the farmer. I thought Labrador was a place because I spent my diaconate in Labrador, and I thought it's a place. It's not a place. It means farmer. Well, that's San Isidro. He was a farmer. The great thing about San Isidro is that he didn't have anything else to recommend him as a saint. His sanctity is in his holiness as a farmer. Yes, there are some legends about miracles and angels doing the plowing and all this, but that's not really his greatness. His greatness is that he was a dedicated, holy man, a man of prayer, of generosity, of other-centeredness, intercession, and a faithful, simple laborer. Most saints have some kind of a title: martyrs, bishops, founders, religious, priests, whatever, hermits. He wasn't any of those. He was a farmer. married man who worked and grew holy, and his holiness had an extraordinary impact on people, in fact, to this day. So it's a great sign to us that holiness does not mean doing, doesn't have to mean doing something extraordinary like founding a new community or working miracles or even being martyred, which is a great gift. No, San Isidro wasn't martyred. He died as a normal death. But his holiness, as I say, it's shown out in his own lifetime. And after his lifetime, many miracles took place at his tomb. And so they enshrined his body there, and it's incorrupt. So it's a place of great devotion and a beautiful place, San Isidro. There aren't many saints like this. In fact, the only one I could think of is Saint Joseph. Saint Joseph the Worker. I looked it up. Is Saint Joseph Labrador? No, he's not Labrador. Labrador really means farmer. The Spanish word for worker is obrero. San Jose Obrero. Or in the Tagalog book, San Jose Mangagawa. So anyway, but Saint Joseph is the only one I could think of who doesn't have any miracles or anything extraordinary about his life and his ministry, but he is a great example of holiness and selfless service and faith. So San Isidro, something like the tradition of Saint Joseph himself. Well, let's take a look at the scriptures of today. We have in today's gospel, Jesus, again at the Last Supper, this long discourse at the Last Supper, where he's taking the last opportunity to teach his disciples about what's going to happen and how they can persevere. And he speaks at some length about the experience of grief, of sorrow, which will lead to joy. Sorrow will lead to rejoicing, or the period of sorrow will give way to a period of rejoicing. Now we know that certainly refers to his passion and his resurrection. But he's not only speaking about his passion and his resurrection, he's speaking about a principle of the spiritual life, that we pass through periods of sorrow and they lead to periods of rejoicing. You could say our whole life in this world is the period of sorrow, and when we get to the life after death, that's when we rejoice. And that's certainly true. But it's also true in lesser ways as we journey through day to day, year by year, the ups and downs of life. Now, the difficulty in the periods of sorrow is that it seems like it shouldn't be like that, and it doesn't make any sense. It's not obvious to us most of the time that our sorrows will lead to rejoicing. In fact, it's almost never obvious to us that this period of suffering will lead to something better. Because if it was obvious to us, we would easily tolerate it. You say, okay, I'll pass through this. Maybe you might think of a medical procedure. Say, well, I have to have this surgery, or I have to have this procedure done so that I will get well, and I have an incentive to pass through the suffering so that I can gain good health and rejoice. So that makes some sense to us. But most of the time, our sicknesses, our losses, the contradictions, they don't make sense to us. Why is there an earthquake? Why is there a war? Why did the person betray me? It doesn't make any sense. So Jesus, in order to reveal the bigger picture, he uses the analogy of a woman in labor. This is one of the cases where the suffering gives way to rejoicing. Maybe one of the best. Now, I don't know if women who have passed through the pains of childbirth really forget about their pain. I think probably can remember it. But it's relatively insignificant by comparison to the great joy of having a child. And that's Jesus' point. Just like this, just like a woman who was in anguish and then rejoiced, so you who are now in anguish when you see me again, you will rejoice. So it's something to keep in mind when we're in anguish, when we're grieving. It's something we cling to in faith, because we can't see any good reason for much of our suffering. But we can believe that God brings good out of suffering, and that our joy will be greater having passed through this period of trial. Sometimes we can see it with the value of hard work, of sacrifice in order to attain a goal, but most of the time we can't see it. St. Paul, the missionary, the great missionary St. Paul, he knew this pattern very well because he experienced it so often. He would go to a place to proclaim the gospel. He would experience sometimes violent persecution. That persecution would either lead to conversion of those who saw him persevering, or it would lead to him going somewhere else and the gospel being spread somewhere else. So he came to a deep conviction that the trials he's passing through are fruitful. That the period of sorrow, of suffering, leads to rejoicing. That the contradictions lead to great fruitfulness. He experienced it so many times. Well, he had been in Athens where he was pretty much a failure, and he never did establish a church there like he felt called to do. So he left Athens, went to Corinth, and today's first reading speaks about Paul in Corinth. Now, Paul is used to moving from place to place. Go somewhere, proclaim the gospel, establish a church among the disciples, and move on. Or go to a place, proclaim the gospel, have some violent persecution get stirred up, and get driven out of town. But that's what he's used to. But in Corinth, here's the reading, the Lord appears to him in a vision and says to him, "Do not be afraid, go on speaking, do not be silent, for I am with you. No one will attack and harm you, for I have many people in this city." That's not what Paul was usually told. It's not his usual experience. But in Corinth, he was told, don't move on. The Holy Spirit is not driving you from place to place. Stay here. And it says he stayed there for a year and a half. Very unusual for Paul to stay a long time in one place. And it wasn't an experience of suffering, of trial, of violent contradiction, until this point also mentioned in this reading, when the Jews rose up together and brought Paul before the Roman official, Gallio, and accused him of violating the laws of Jewish worship. And Gallio says, well, that has nothing to do with Roman law. That's your own business. And he throws the case out. So Paul is rescued. Okay, he doesn't suffer. But his companion Sosthenes, the synagogue official, becomes the victim of suffering. Those who were bringing Paul to trial pounced on Sosthenes and beat him. I don't know what was going on there. I can only assume that Sosthenes, who was a Jewish official, synagogue official, so he was one of their own leaders, Sosthenes must have been sympathetic to Paul. Maybe he had already embraced the gospel, or allowed Paul to speak in the synagogue, or done something that angered his fellow Jews. And so it was his fault in the mind of these accusers. It was Sosthenes' fault that Paul got away with this. So since they couldn't attack Paul, they attacked Sosthenes. Now, Sosthenes shows up later as one of Paul's companions. I can't remember which of Paul's epistles he mentions having Sosthenes with him. So this suffering of being rejected by his own people, being driven out of his own synagogue, led to him becoming a missionary. So the principle is at work again. Sorrow turns to joy. He certainly experienced sorrow. Sosthenes experienced sorrow when he was being beaten up by his own colleagues. But then, when that moved him to embrace the gospel more deeply and become a missionary himself, led to great joy. How does it apply to us? This is what we have to discover day by day. We can embrace the principle in faith. In fact, we know it's true. We know it's true from the lives of the saints, from the scriptures, and probably from our own experience, if we're honest about our journey. Some periods of great difficulty have borne great fruit for us. There are some things we can't learn except through suffering. Some priceless lessons and maturity can only come through suffering. So anyone our age should have some knowledge of that. But how it's at work now, today, this week, we don't know. This brings us to the need to call upon the Holy Spirit. As I mentioned at the beginning, today is the first day of our novena to the Holy Spirit. Why do we call on the Holy Spirit? We already received him in baptism and in confirmation because we need to learn how to rely on the Holy Spirit. We need to learn how to be sensitive to the Holy Spirit. We need the guidance and the encouragement of the Holy Spirit for times of trial. So we call on the Holy Spirit, yes, for enlightenment, but also for courage, fortitude, understanding, wisdom, and all the gifts. We'll be praying for all the gifts in the next 9 days. So as we reflect on San Isidro, who persevered in simple and humble labor with great faith, with great selflessness, as we reflect on the experience of women who have passed through the great trial of childbearing and come out the other side with rejoicing, as we reflect on St. Paul, the missionary, and his companion Sosthenes, we see this principle again and again. And we rededicate ourselves to following the Lord in good times and bad times, richer or poorer. We persevere in faith, relying on the strength that comes from the Holy Spirit.